Today, on the Southern California Real Estate Report, we talk about the housing crisis. Stay tuned.
Good morning, welcome to Southern California Real Estate Report. This is Bob McGuire and Daniel Wise coming to you from San Diego, California. Once again in the news, local housing has gone through the roof.
It has definitely gone through the roof. And I know we have talked a lot about this in the past, but it's been a major issue for us property managers because we've got applications probably within hours on properties. So it's kind of crazy out there right now, especially if you're trying to look for any type of housing.
Yeah, and so it's interesting, you know, there's a couple things going on. So there's been this big run up in demand over the pandemic. So I think we've had a lot of conversations about this. Danielle and I have talked about different neighborhoods and just you know, the run up in housing appreciation in our market, but it's gotten to a level where it's crazy. So in the last year, San Diego housing has appreciated by 30%. And that's from the Union Tribune and from, I think, one of the local business radio stations here yesterday. So today being the 2nd of September. So this is fresh off the press, September 1st, 2021. So, you know, the last time that we had this type of appreciation was right before the Great Recession. So that tells you kind of the demand that's out there. It's frenzied, you know.
It is frenzied. I was at an AMP event last night, and there was a guy who mentioned how a lot of people are moving to San Diego to get away from the bigger cities.
Yeah.
And he was convinced that that's why we had traffic.
Yeah.
It was a funny comment, though, because he was probably not necessarily...
Oh, because we had so much traffic the other day, you mean?
No, just in general.
Oh,
just complaining about the traffic. Not,
yeah.
Not because the 805 was shut down for during rush hour.
Yeah.
He was like, it's not local San Diegans anymore. It's the fact that our city is a very desirable place to live.
Yeah. It's super nice. I mean...
It's been relatively affordable. I think now we question that, right?
So it's been relatively affordable. So I agree with that statement. So up into the pandemic, really, like in the last 2 years, let's say, it has been relatively affordable relative to other Southern California cities. So L.A., Orange County, even the Central Coast, you know, from San Luis Obispo south, you know, those areas, I mean, Santa Barbara and St. Louis, it's a supply and demand thing, right? So it's always going to be expensive there or more expensive there than other areas. But L.A., like, as you know, West L.A., your friend that, you know, bought a house, it wasn't like a first-time home price, you know, in Santa Monica. So, you know, that's the thing. I mean, West L.A. and you know, different areas around L.A., we saw... And you and I, you being an L.A. girl, seeing the run-up in prices going from the west side of the 405 to the east side of the 405, that happened over, what, maybe a 4 or 5 year period, you know? So you kind of knew that, okay, people are going to get priced out of these areas. The beach areas were always expensive. Orange County has always been expensive, and especially as you get coastal. But somehow, some way, San Diego always kind of remained, like, pretty affordable around a lot of the neighborhoods relative to what you were seeing up there. You know, if their prices were in the low millions, ours were in the high sixes and sevens, you know, it seemed like. Well, now they're saying that the average home price is hitting $1 million in our market. And that's all happened in the last 2 years.
Right. I mean, interest rates are low, so you can borrow a lot more.
That's right.
That's a big contributing factor to why
right.
We've seen such a rise in home prices. And also, like, the job stability in San Diego, I think that you're getting a lot of, if you're buying a $1 million home, even if you're, even with interest rates this low, you know, you're likely to have a pretty good professional job to be able to support that mortgage. So I think that there are contributing factors to that more than just the fact that we are obviously lacking in housing.
Right.
But I guess back to the fact that apartment rents are also absolutely insane.
Well, and so that's the other thing, right?
That's really what we need to – that's really what I think we're focusing on right now is the fact that, like, demand for – demand at that higher level if you are able to buy a home and you're – you know, you have a – likely have a professional career that can afford the home is great.
Right.
But if you're someone like the generation that's just coming out of college right now and you're trying to rent – yeah, you are, you know, I see the emails come through our website all the time and people ask to be put on wait lists. I've got great credit. I am looking for a one bedroom. I just got engaged. I have a service animal and I'm having a hard time finding a place that accepts dogs or, you know, obviously.
We get an email a night from people like
and,
that.
And it's the desperateness in these emails. Can you please help me find a place? And, you know, we don't have – it's not part of our job to help tenants find a place typically because we only have what our inventory allows us to show and what we have available. So, obviously, we do first-come, first-served basis and, you know, we have a really standard process for leasing. But it is – the desperateness in the market right now is it's really pretty insane.
Yeah, it is. And so – So there's a couple of different, you know, schools of thought on this, right? And so one of them, there's an opinion piece right now from Scott Sherman that's in the Union Tribune. I think this was from August 31st. And, you know, one of the things that he keeps bringing up is supply and demand, right? And so like you're saying, there's been a lot of supply and demand issues here since the pandemic started. So there's been supply chain issues. So materials, I have a brother who's in the construction industry. You know, he's telling me that, and you know, he works for a large national company and, you know, the issues that they're going through with shipping and fabrication and everything else are a big deal. And so, you know, when you're doing large projects or you're, you know, building housing and all of a sudden, you know, midstream, your material prices go up by a factor of nearly 40% in some cases, and in some cases even more. So that's having a big effect on things. Then you have this pandemic where nobody can work on a construct, you know, everyone's 6 feet apart. And I don't know if you've ever seen building, but I mean, typically there's a lot of guys, especially with downtown, like you know, when you're doing high density, multi-story, you know, residential or condo projects, there's a lot of trades that are on those jobs.
Luckily, construction was considered essential. So, yeah. That's really important to note because it never stopped completely.
Right. But it had to be separated and pared down and, you know, you had to have trades coming in and then, you know, the personal protective equipment that you had to, you know, make sure that everyone was wearing
that
and
that you couldn't get.
Yeah, all those issues. So, yes, it never stopped, but it definitely put a hiccup in, you know, the progress of things. So, you know, a job that there was maybe 10 guys on, they scaled it back to 5, you know, and things like that, depending on who they were working for. So, you know, there's a lot to talk about here, and there's a lot to unpack on this subject because there's so many nuances to it. But one of the things, so Scott Sherman wrote this article, and he was a prior city council member, and he I think has a pretty good idea about it. And he's saying, you know, he's also a housing advocate, so he wants to see, you know, he wants to see more housing in the market, but the problem is we're straddling this line where the politicians want to have both sides, right? So on one side, they want to provide affordable housing, but on the other side, they want to provide labor that is typically not market rate labor. So you can't get market rate housing if you're not using market rate labor. They want to use union labor, which usually, you know, it has a big cost increase, and you know, so that combined with material costs right now, it's hard to build anything that's affordable per se when also our land costs are so high. So they're trying to figure out, you know, where and how do we do this in the city of San Diego. So there's another supervisor right now. I think she's in the 3rd district, and I'm sorry for this podcast. She's not in my article, but her name escapes me. But she came out at the same time, which all this has occurred in the last 3 days, because now everyone's going, oh, my God, you know, houses have gone up 30%. Rents have gone up 9% in the last year. That I don't quite understand how they're getting that data, because technically for part of the year we haven't really been able to do rent increases. So it's either the new product that's coming out that's skewing the market a little bit. You know, we'd have to talk to CoStar and really understand that. I don't know where they're getting their data, but I'd like to hear like what Josh Ohl or someone from CoStar would say about that. But anyhow, so it's an interesting time right now here in San Diego. So what's happening is now people are really starting to the internal politicians that are kind of part of this every day. So, you know, you've got Todd Gloriad. He came out with a new program that's like a housing for everyone type of thing. And he's looking at let's do it with higher density and let's build low income, but let's use union labor. And then this woman in the 3rd district is coming out and saying, hey, let's go out and repurpose all of the excess land that the county and city have and use those for housing. Now, you and I have talked about here in Kearny Mesa, there's a lot of surplus. You know, we have – what do we have next door? Isn't it the RTD lot, that huge lot where they store the buses and everything like that? You know, so there's also excess land there. I don't know if you've ever noticed that, but there's a pretty big parcel, I think, that's part of that site. And maybe it's a private guy. But anyhow, in these areas where maybe there's industrial properties or properties that aren't fully utilized, they're thinking about repurposing those and squeezing in some housing. And I think that could be, possibly a plan that could work in the right areas. But at the end of the day, there's probably two things that need to happen. One, there in our market, there probably needs to be an increase in wages, you know, so that people can afford the rents that are being charged. And on the other side, there needs to be
a
better way to get building approved. There has to be a faster approval process.
Say that, you know, wages have not scaled
to the rent. Yeah.
To the rent or yeah.
Yeah. But we've also raised minimum wage too. So you have to look at it like if there was a better way to get things built quicker, and if we could get areas where we could build more affordable housing, I think that there's a way to build apartments that would be more affordable for those people that need it, or do a private public partnership with, you know, the city or the county or whoever it is to help build more of the subsidized housing. Similar to the guys that you and I listened to at the USD function, they had very good success in that area, but they went through the same problem. It's all the CEQA stuff that slows everything down. They're still faced when they go to a project and, you know, even though the city is on their side to get it done, it still takes 3 years to get it approved.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that, you know,
gotta fix.
You know, I think, yeah, like Hirsch is doing that project over at the Riverwalk.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I just went to a Kilroy project, the One Paseo. I always call it El Paseo. Accidentally.
Yeah.
One Paseo and Del Mar. And, you know, they were, the guy from Kilroy was there, and he said they were $51 million in the hole before they even put a shovel in the ground.
Yeah.
So
on all the soft costs and approvals and, you know, getting everything
being sued as much as they were.
Oh, God.
Could you imagine at that time be $51 million in the hole before you even put a shovel in the ground?
Yeah. I mean, before you receive, you know, even an approved plan or have construction start, you know.
In Del Mar, again, it's a notoriously difficult city to work with.
Look how long the little project on Highway 1 has sat there. That open little commercial project next to the French bakery there. That thing has sat there for maybe as long as I've lived in San Diego. I mean, it feels like it's been sitting there going, it's coming soon, you know, for maybe 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
And here's the other thing, you know. I want to wish the city luck, and I'm obviously we are housing advocates as well. We support any kind of housing in our office because, obviously, you know we all succeed with more housing. So that's a good thing. But the city has a horrible track record to date with their real estate. They've made terrible decisions. They don't seek out people that understand the housing. At least it doesn't seem like they do. They seem to get a lot of, you know, academics and people like that have general ideas of, you know, what should be done, right? But the execution of it is always more the same, right? You hear the same thing over and over. You and I will go to this USD thing if the pandemic allows us to, you know, in January, and we'll probably have it will probably literally be a continuation of where we left off, where they're going to be like, well, housing prices doubled in the last, you know, 3 years, and we're still, you know, 75,000 units short of our goal of what we need for the market. So if they continue to fight that tide and they don't do anything about their processes, we're going to constantly have this problem. It's just going to be an ongoing problem, and it's never going to get straightened out. And that's why in our opinion, in my opinion, that's why they start to penalize the private property owners, right? Because they're going, you guys have an advantage because you've somehow gotten ahead and rents go up. And it's really an economic thing of supply and demand. If you have a building in the middle of North Park and, you know, you're putting your rents out for a two-bedroom at $2,200 and you get 47 applications on that, it's just human nature to go, God, I think my rents are too low. These are the things that we're faced with right now. And so until there's better processes in place, I think we're going to have this problem. But the one thing that is going to be for sure, this affordable housing crisis here in San Diego and with the migration and all the things that we talked about today, it's not going away. So we'll keep an eye on this. And I think over this next quarter, between the eviction moratorium here in California and the housing issues that are going on, I think the politics are going to become much more heavy-handed. That's kind of my prediction. And that's really what this podcast is about today, is kind of giving some sort of what we see coming out in the future here over the next 6 months. I think that, you know, there's going to be a lot of discussion about this. And some of these things that we're faced with right now, I think rent control is going to be a big topic again and things like that. So the city needs to meet the owners halfway too, and they've got to sit down and figure out these processes because the processes are broken.
Yeah, they really are.
And nobody wants to talk about that, and that's something that really needs to improve. So we're going to keep an eye on this. This is going to be a very interesting topic, and thanks for listening today. This has been the Southern California Real Estate Report.